Good morning, good afternoon, good night, everyone. This is another episode of the No Cosign Podcast. I am here with a very special guest. I usually don't introduce guests, but this person actually needs an introduction. She is an amazing singer, an amazing comic book artist, and amongst other things, has her clothing line. I am here with Miss Emily Lazar. How are you?
Hey, thanks for that intro. That's a great intro. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm enjoying the LA weather because back home it's a lot of snow.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to be on the West Coast sometimes.
Yes, very much so. Almost makes me never want to leave.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I was talking to you off air like a couple of days ago about like just a couple of things I wanted to go over here, and I was listening to your new song, "Kill This Love." Mm-hmm. I wanted you to see if you could kind of give me a little bit of a breakdown of the song.
Yeah, the lyrics for that song are kind of like built wrapped around, it's a little bit wrapped around the comic book. So I don't know if you know the scope of September Morning, but it's a musical art project based on like a graphic novel. So I play the character September on stage, and I dress like her and everything like that. And everything's wrapped around this graphic novel. And she's basically a Reaper human hybrid who's trying to save all the good souls in the world. As the antagonist, who's called Fate, is trying to take all the good souls in the world. And leave all the bad souls so that the world can self-destruct. And September's trying to save all the good souls. So it's like she becomes, she gets into this epic battle between the living and the dead against fate. And it's a pretty epic storyline and comic book. So if you like comics and graphic novels, you'd probably be down to read it. So Kill This Love is a little bit about her journey towards the end of the fourth book. She kind of goes in front of Fate, and she has this kind of fight with Fate in person and learns a lot about her past that she didn't know and all this sort of stuff, and gets all these hints of what's really going on, and it ends with a cliffhanger. But she has this weird love-hate relationship with Fate in the graphic novel, and it's a great thing to write about, because I think everybody kind of has that one person in their life that they have a love-hate relationship with, and they feel kind of like drawn to them, but they don't know why, because they know it's super toxic. So Kill This Love is kind of like about that. It's about, you know, being in love or loving somebody so much that you kind of overlook all of the fucked up badness about the whole relationship. And you just keep on going back to it, so it's just really hard to kill it. And that's kind of the genesis of the lyrics of Kill This Love. And then as far as the music is concerned, like, we borrowed from a lot of different genres in the song. We have, like, you know, heavy guitars, like metal sort of sounding things, like paired up against like urban beats, you know, and urban flow in the verses. So we kind of mix all these genres together, and I mix the vocals all together with like sort of like more of a down tempo, like trip hoppy vibe in the verse, and then this big rock chorus. And so I think it's a really interesting song, because it does kind of like mishmash the two worlds together pretty cool in a different way.
It's funny, because I'm not familiar with a lot of the comic book stuff that you've done. I'm more so the music, and literally everything you said, I interpreted that, but like in a more, obviously, like real life day to day. So like, for example, like a person disregarding the red flags when dating someone.
Right.
It's like, I know it's not right, but I'm just going to do it anyway. I'm going to disregard.
Right.
Yes. And as far as the music, like this song in particular, compared to a lot of the other songs, I definitely felt like an urban type of like undertone. It's very different from a lot of the other songs that you made, in a sense.
Yeah.
So I definitely felt that. It was really well done. I really liked it a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's fun to mix genres like that. You know, I don't think enough artists kind of take that chance because it's a little bit hard to kind of like pigeonhole an artist when they take that chance. But I think it's a chance, a risk that you should take sometimes in your art.
It's good because sometimes pigeonholing is bad and you'll just be like casted in this just like small box. And, you know, sometimes as an artist, you want to be able to just show that you're capable of doing so much more. And it's not even so much for other people. It's almost just like for yourself, just to like prove to yourself, like, yeah, I can dibble and dabble in like other things.
Yeah, exactly.
Take me through some of the creative process, like musically, like who inspires you? Like what kind of got you into music?
Well, I mean, you know, my dad and my mom, of course, you know, when you're growing up, you have like, you know, influence from your parents a lot of the time with your musical sort of influence. And my mom loved Annie Lennox and my dad loved like a lot of hard rock bands, Aerosmith and lots of different like hard rock bands. And so I kind of like grew up listening to this like weird mix of like these pop artists and then, you know, like rock. And then my mom also liked The Cure and bands like that, Susie and the Banshees and things like that too. So like synthy pop bands. So there was a little bit of that growing up. And then my uncle was into black metal, like death metal. And so so I had the whole other end of the spectrum from him. And then, you know, I kind of like all different types of music, you know, from urban to classical, to hard rock, to metal. So, you know, I kind of bounced all around the board. And I think that it wasn't really like a genre per se that influenced me. I think it's more of like a songwriting perspective. I just liked good songs, like well-written songs, like Jeff Buckley and like, you know, The Cure, like anything that, like, just well-written songs. And so that's kind of like where I kind of went to. And then of course, you know, when I was like in the Warped Tour scene, it was kind of like Glassjaw and like, you know, A Day to Remember and My Chemical Romance and all those bands and, you know, stuff like that. So I mean, there was like I went through a lot of different phases, you know, but I also like listened to Biggie and Tupac and Dre and, you know, so it's like I'm a little bit all over the place. But I think that you can find inspiration in music kind of anywhere as long as it's good. As long as the music is good, you know, it doesn't really matter the genre. As long as it's good and it speaks to you in a certain way, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, it's a good, healthy balance, not like sticking to like one genre and just mastering that in a sense, but just being able to bounce around. Like me, when I used to try to pursue music, a lot of the stuff I used to do was when I would buy a CD or a tape, I would like look through the liner notes because I wanted to know like who produced this, where was this produced at, who wrote it. So for me, that's like where I would get like a lot of inspiration from. And just like even just listening as a fan, I like to see like who's in like the behind the scenes type of things to like produce this type of sound.
Yeah. I get that.
So with this past year that went down, everyone has been affected by COVID. How has that affected you creatively and with your mental health?
You know, it's hard because I'm used to being on tour like 8 months out of the year. So it was really hard not to be touring. Not only like financially because we get 90% of our income from it, but just emotionally. And like, I mean, touring for me and just making art in that way and like, and sharing it with the fans and seeing all my fans have become my friends. So like whenever we go to a city, like we know everyone. So it's like we go and we're like, oh, hey, you know, you get to know your fans in those cities. And so it's kind of like I haven't seen my friends in a year. It's really weird. Besides that, it's also kind of like just getting to the point where I really, like, going on stage is kind of like this weird emotional therapy session for me. I go up there and I never even remember, like, what I do. I just kind of do it. You know, it's all kind of, like, automatic. But it's kind of like a way to release all of the pent up frustration and anger and anything that I feel like I can't like get out in the real world. I can get out on stage, and that's like a genius way of like subdividing your emotions. and I haven't had that in a year. So it's been pretty frustrating. Like I've gotten into bouts of depression. I've like went through a lot of mood swings just because I'm like, I don't know how to deal without dealing that way a little bit. And so for me, it's been kind of like, I had to pivot into other things. I started painting. I paint these paintings called the Pixie Girls. I started creating NFTs, non-fungible tokens, out of my art, which are launching on Friday and on OpenSea, and it's like, that's really exciting. But I've had to like figure out different ways of doing what we all have been doing for so long. And it's hard when you know, work your whole life to be at a certain place in your career, and then all of a sudden the rug gets yanked out from under you, you know?
Do you feel with the pandemic that it went down, what you initially had planned to release, did you feel like under the gun to like have to release? Did it kind of just made you not want to release, like because you know, everyone kind of has like set days, like, hey, I want to get something in by the fall or something in the spring. Do you feel like it kind of tilted you either way?
Not so much that. I mean, it was just kind of like, you know, it just kind of, we were all hoping that touring would be reinstated. You know, we all kept them, oh, next month it'll come back, next month it'll go, you know, it was that whole thing. So, like, we were trying to plan out, you put, like, as a rock band, you try to plan out your releases in front of your touring, behind your touring schedule. You try to tour for a little bit, and then you release, and then you really tour on your release, you know? And so, like, you're trying to plan the touring with the release and all this sort of stuff, but when the whole world stops, it's like, and then everything's getting pushed back, and even now we're getting cancellations for summer festivals and this and that, the other, like things aren't, like, really restoring quite yet, so it just gets really frustrating. You are at the, you know, behest of, like, the unknown, basically. And you just kind of have to ride it out. So for us, it was kind of like, okay, it's been like 6 months and we're not going to be touring till next year. So let's put out some music. We have this music. We already got it done. We just need to mix it and master it. So we just start putting out some singles just to get our feet back in the water and like, and just keep it going. And so that's what we've continued to do. And, I think it's been good for us, you know, to keep that engagement with our fan base. I think it's really important.
Yes, because if not, you'll probably get lost in the shuffle or forgotten with, you know, everyone trying to figure out how to cope and maneuver in this, like, trying time.
Right.
Tell me more about the pixie art. Like, what... Like, how long have you been doing that? What kind of got you into wanting to do in that?
Well, it kind of came out of the pandemic, right? You know, like, I was looking for a different way to express myself because I couldn't tour. And the, you know, the pixie art was, like, just a way to kind of, I don't know, just expand my art universe a little bit. And I've always liked painting. It's always been like a really cool thing that I'd like to do. But I also kind of like had these ideas of these girls that were kind of like dandies and waifs and little, like, just little pixies that I wanted to kind of create. And I've always been a very, like, create the universe sort of person. Like, I like creating universes around things. So, it just kind of came from that place, you know, that place of, okay, I'm going to be stuck at my house. What can I do in my house that's super creative, that has a whole thing wrapped around it? And it's, and that's what it became.
That's dope. Finding that's kind of what got me back into podcasting, was the world stopping and me like looking at this equipment. I'm like, ah, maybe I should jump back into this. And now a year later, here we are.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So one thing that drew me to you when we met a few times in passing was your love for shoes, sneakers in particular.
Yeah,
you'll see me and I'll see you, and we look at each other's feet and we're like, okay, like this guy knows what's going on. So
yeah, exactly. You love.
I want you to name me three of your like dopest shoes in your collection right now.
Okay, well, one I haven't quite acquired yet, but it's on its way, is my Jordan 1 Gold Toes that I've been coveting for like the past month and a half, and I'm like in a really hefty bid on StockX, but those shoes are going to be mine. And then I have some Louboutins that I actually love so much. And like one is the Gasolinas, and they're like thigh high sort of suede, 5 or 6 inch boots with a pointed heel, a stiletto heel. And then the shorter version of those are kind of like just short as in boot version. It's like, it's still like a little mini boot, but it's not, it doesn't have like the whole thigh high thing going on. And they're also beautiful. I forgot what they're called, but they're amazing. They're suede as well, and I love them. I love all my Louboutins, so I can't pick one. It's like picking your favorite child. I don't know how to do that. But yeah, I love shoes.
Yes. What's coming down the line? I know you just recently dropped this new song. Is an album coming out? Is it another comic book like around the corner? What are we doing next?
We are working on another single that's going to drop soon. And then that'll be coming out probably the next 2 or 3 months. And then we're working on getting most likely a Kickstarter together for the next comic book series. So that is probably going to happen. I'd say somewhere in the summer or fall, we'll start working on that and moving that forward. And right now, on Friday, I'm dropping an NFT, which is like this new form of like tokenizing art. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's huge. Soulja Boy just did one, and a couple of other artists have done them. Grimes just put a couple out. They're like really, it's a really interesting space in the cryptocurrency world, and it's a way of tokenizing an actual piece of digital art, and you can actually like link it to physical art too. So it's a really interesting way of monetizing the art world. And also, if you do get the token, you can flip it on the art market and make money for you and also for the artist. So the artist gets a percentage cut of the money you flip it for. So it's really great. There's no third parties involved with it. It goes direct to artist. It's kind of like the future. And there's a gentleman by the name of Blau that just dropped an album through the NFT space, and he made $11 million off of it. And it was an album release in one night, $11 million in bids. And it's kind of like made history in the music world and the art world, because you can monetize music this way as well. So I think that there's going to be a lot of changes in the paradigm coming up very soon. And it's really great to be on the forefront of it. So I have started my collection on OpenSea. And if you have a chance to look up Emily Lazar, September Morning, the Soul Collection, you'll find my collection there, and it's pretty cool looking. And it has music attached to animated art, and then also I did some stuff in the meme world, and I like put it into our art. So it's kind of like a meme-y sort of art piece. It's really cool. It's all animated with our song Wake the Dead put over top of it. So
that's dope, because the way music is consumed now versus payouts is it's pretty disheartening sometimes.
It's horrible. I got my check from Spotify, from my distribution company, and it was, I mean, I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? This isn't going to do anything. You know,
yeah.
This doesn't even pay for a mix on our next record. I can't even pay for a mix. So it's like, this is a different way of monetizing, and it's really hot right now, and it's working. So for the time period that it works and fans are engaged and they want to help the artist directly and not through a third party, direct to artists, it's a good way to do that and still get art that is super collectible. It's kind of like collecting like baseball cards or magic cards or anything like that, but on crack. It's like crazy digital space for collectors, and it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, anything that helps support the artist I champion, because it's weird. Like, we're the ones that putting this out into the world, and this third party kind of just reaps all the benefits.
Right.
It's
right.
It makes you almost not want to do it sometimes, because it's like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you're not feeding yourself. You're feeding somebody else with all your hard work and all your money. Because people don't realize how much money it takes to create a song properly, to mix a song properly, to like, yeah, you can do it all for nothing, but it's going to sound like crap. Like, if you don't have the gear, if you don't have like the studio gear and like the right way of doing it, like, unless you are like highly intuitive, and even then, it's still not going to sound the best it could if you went through somebody that really knows what they're doing and has the actual gear to make it all sound great. That takes money.
Yes.
And people don't realize how much it takes. It takes a lot more than you're going to get off of like even 10 million streams off of Spotify. That's only a couple $1,000. You can't even do a song for that right now.
And so, that's just one platform.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's not even counting YouTube or Apple or Tidal or Amazon or whatever DSP, because all of them kind of have different payouts, and that's an issue too. I feel like it should be more uniform.
Yeah, well, that's why I really implore you to look into NFTs, because that's why the blockchain is so awesome, because it's all in one blockchain, and you can see all the transactions that go down. You can't hide any of the money. It's all there. It's all open source. It's all coded, and you can go and look at it all as you want to. It's very hard to squander money in different ways if you're on a blockchain. You got it. It's all there to see. So in that respect, like, you know, the platform takes, what, 2%, I think, for hosting it, just like a host would, just like GoDaddy or something like that. And then everything else is direct to artists, direct from consumer to the artist. So, I mean, there are gas fees. There are fees that the blockchain does, but sometimes they're higher than other times. It just kind of depends on how many people are using the space. So that's the only thing I think that sucks about it, is the gas fees. And there are other chains out there that are working on, like, reducing those gas fees or even getting rid of them altogether. So, like, once that happens,
I think that we're going to have a really great system.
Yeah, I mean, every platform is going to take their fees, so that, like, comes with the territory, but 2% sounds better than, like 90%.
Right. Right now, like, I just minted an NFT. It was about $55 to mint it. So $55 to put it onto the blockchain, and then then OpenSea takes about 2% of the sale or whatever. So that is a lot less than putting my stuff on Spotify, because I'm getting 0.001 cents of every stream on Spotify. So I much rather go with something on a blockchain, on an NFT, than doing it any other way at this point. Now, that might change. I mean, Spotify is a great platform because it has such a great network, but that's what you're paying for. You're paying for the network. You're paying for the chance to get seen. And with this sort of platform, you still have the chance to get seen. You still have the network that you have on all these other things, but you don't have an algorithm. There's no algorithm. There's no, like, they don't hide you if you don't do, you know, it's just, it's all this open source. It's all right there. So it's really interesting. It's an interesting way to look at art. It's an interesting way to look at investing in art. If you're into that sort of thing, and investing, of course, is, you know, can be scary at times, but you only, you know, if you're doing it as an investment and not just as like a patronage to an artist that you love and adore and just want to have that piece, if you want to like flip it, if you're doing it something like as an investment, then you take your risk, of course. But I think most of the people really just love the art, you know, they're there for the artist. At least I've seen that for my art friends that are on there. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, because the thing with consumers as well, at least, you know, the masses, is convenience. So that's why they really won't know what goes behind, like, a creative process. They're just like, oh, it's here. Let me listen. And then it's kind of like if you watch, like, a show on Netflix and you binge it in, like, a day, it probably took them, like, a year and a half to, like, get everything done. And then everyone's like, okay, it's done. Oh, where's the next season?
Well, there's a weird disproportion between the amount of time it takes to consume something to the amount of time it actually takes to make it. Consumers, like, if they consume something fast, they don't, it's like they don't value it as much. You know, like music, let's take music. A song is 3 minutes and 10 seconds, usually, around there. 3 minutes and 10 seconds is nothing, right? So, like, some people just feel like music should all be free, and it should always be free, and you shouldn't pay for music. And that's how we got into streaming. Like, that's literally why we're in streaming right now. Because at first people were pirating music. They were just stealing it and stealing the files. But now we're into streaming. People feel a little bit better about doing that. But you still have to realize that the artist is not really getting much of that, you know? So it's becoming this whole, like, thing where, you know, the consumer consumes it so fast that they don't think it's worth the value. Is sometimes they don't think the value is accredited to the thing that they can consume so fast. If they consume it slower, then they sometimes adequate more value to it, which is kind of fucked. But, like, it's kind of a mindset in a way. I don't think that's the only mindset that goes behind these things, but I think it's one of the things that people kind of, like, look at.
Yeah. I feel like with this new way of potentially helping the artist, just consuming and investing, will kind of level the playing field. And hopefully it will kind of force the arm to these other DSPs to, like, you know, kind of, like, give more back to the artist. That would be a great, you know, wave. Because the more platforms and the way more accessibility that you have your stuff on, like, that's obviously the goal, is just to have whatever platform, whatever listener decides they want to use, you want to make sure that you have your stuff on there, but at the same time, you want to have the correct percentage, you know, given to you. So hopefully enough people start using these new forms of distributing their art, and it kind of forces the hands to these other people to kind of acquiesce.
Yeah, exactly.
But tell everyone where to follow you, so people could keep in touch and keep just going on with what you're doing.
All right. You can go to septembermorning.com, and it's MOURNING. That's the main website for the actual, like, music side of everything. My personal, I'm on Facebook, Emily Lazar, LAZAR. And I have an Instagram, but right now we're having some issues with it, but it's EmilyLazar_SM. And my Twitter is EmilyLazar_SM. So both of those spots you can find me. my Instagram will be up and running soon again.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking your time to talk to me and to my listeners.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.